Another issue that's been explored in recent years has to do with patients who have brain metastases. What's the current thinking about treating these patients?
Are they asymptomatic brain metastases, or are they symptomatic brain metastases? How many brain metastases are in the brain? Because obviously, if you have one, consideration could be for surgery. Consideration could be for stereotactic radiation therapy. In the old days, we used to give whole brain irradiation. As patients live longer and as they're getting older and have lung cancer, the concern is what about its effect on the mentation and other neurological sequela. So I think it has not gotten simpler. I think it's gotten more complicated and who to pick the patient for the appropriate therapy.
I think it's gotten better, though, because there are so many different options. And where, you know, the perhaps affecting one's thinking was an issue, you have that option now of the stereotactic. For larger tumors, removing them surgically is very often the best option, and it gets patients better quickly and can allow radiation to be given in not an emergent way. And people generally do so much better now having these various options available. I think it also... I think there's not a site of spread that elicits more fear in a person than having the cancer in the brain. And I think it's comforting to know that there are effective ways of treating it. And even using our oldest sort of treatment, whole brain radiotherapy, the vast majority of patients have that cancer controlled for their entire life.
I really think that surgery and radiosurgery become more of a complementary to each other as opposed to competing with each other as well, because I think with a small asymptomatic lesion, radiosurgery is probably the better approach as opposed to surgery, because, you know, if there's active disease going on, you can actually get the treatment to the extracranial sites more quickly. Because of all these advances with better surgical techniques, with focused radiation, we've been able to improve or decrease the chance of people dying from progressive disease in the brain. It used to be that the majority of people, if they develop brain metastasis, they would die of their disease. And now these days, you know, we decrease its numbers quite a bit. It's probably down to about 15 to 20% of people who develop brain metastasis go on to die of their disease, as opposed to over 50% not too long ago.
We talked earlier about establishing a treatment plan. We have another patient whose story helps illustrate the options. Patty lives in Silver Spring, Maryland. After her initial treatment, she has continued with maintenance therapy.
I got into beating because my kids were in high school and I worried about them a lot. So I would do the beating to take my mind off of it. And I can just beat all day long. And you think about the person that you're beating for, and that makes it easier. Since I've been sick, it's really been a help. I was doing a beat show at one of the local churches. And I had been sick for a couple of days, and I didn't know why, and sick meaning like flu-like symptoms. But the fatigue kept getting worse and worse. You know, it was to the point where I was about to pass out.
You all right?
So we thought we'd call the ambulance at that point. The doctor decided to do an x-ray, and he came back and he said, "You have a spot on your lung." I was like, "Yeah, I know. Because I had bronchitis once and it never cleared up right. So I don't think it's anything to worry about." He said, "You need to see your doctor." It was like, okay, no big deal.
They saw an abnormality on her chest x-ray, which turned into an abnormality on a CAT scan that was consistent with what looked like to be lung cancer at that time.
At the time, I was still smoking. I smoked for like about 37 years, okay? And he said to me, "I'll operate, but you got to stop smoking." Before I went on that table, I think it was like 5 days before, I quit just like that.
So she underwent some preoperative testing and then went right to surgery. Back when Patty was diagnosed, we weren't really doing anything after that point to help prevent the cancer from coming back. The hope is that she was cured with surgery by itself.
So then in 2007, we had been going through having CAT scans every so often.
She was starting to complain a little bit of a cough, She had a little bit of pain under her armpit, and then they did some imaging, including a CAT scan, which showed a lot of lung masses and nodules in her lungs that should not have been there and were new compared with before.
And he looked at the CAT scan and he said, "Oh my God, it's back. I'm so sorry."
I really felt bad for Patty because she had gone through so much. And then to have this boom, hammer fall on you again.
I was scared to death at that point because he broke it down for me. He said, "You know, we're going to do the best we can. We're going to start therapy. It's not going to be easy. It may not work."
For anybody who's presenting with metastatic lung cancer, the prognosis is very, very guarded. So it was middling at best. She was treated with a course of chemotherapy initially for about 4 months or so, and then we left her on one drug since then, which at that time and currently still is the standard of care for patients with advanced non-small cell lung cancer. And she's been on this maintenance regimen now for nearly 2 years. This is a biologic therapy which blocks blood vessel growth to tumors. The nice thing is that it's very well tolerated and has virtually no side effects in a lot of our patients.
That's how he thought we would get this cured, or not cured, but put it in remission, if you will. And he was very specific about that. We're going to try to put it in remission. He never said that he would cure it.
Remission is a term we rarely use in lung cancer patients because it's few and far between. But Patty is probably one of the few people I would say that is in remission. Her cancer actually disappeared from her CAT scans.
You're in the wrong place. I can't find anything wrong with you.
That's too bad.
Unfortunately, Patty is not cured. The way I describe it to all my patients is that our chemo and our drugs with lung cancer at best can kill 99% or 99.9%, say, of lung cancer cells, making it disappear from a CAT scan. But we know that there are some cells hiding out somewhere in her body, and if you give it enough time, it's going to grow back at some point.
I think to get through it all, you have to have a lot of support.
I think in the 35 years that we've been married, I think that probably we haven't been any closer than we are right now.
Prayer plays a very, very important role in our healing. I'm thankful. I'm really, really blessed because it's going to be all right. Whether it be all right, negative or positive, it's going to be all right.
I'm good. Yes, all is good.
Dr. Ettinger?
Yes, I think this patient got bevacizumab as a continuation of her original therapy because she was put on bevacizumab plus chemotherapy. And as part of the study that we discussed previously, if you're responding, you continue with bevacizumab. I think the other important thing is quitting smoking. I think that's critical, I think, for two reasons. One, a patient with lung cancer is at risk for another second primary lung cancer. But the other reason, usually smokers, and she smoked for something, I think, for 37 years, has chronic lung disease, and it aggravates that. So there's two reasons, I think.
What's the evidence for using maintenance therapy?
There's been several studies that looked at maintenance therapy, and the one that the most of us quote was a study looking at pemetrexate versus placebo after giving a patient 4 cycles of cisplatin-based chemotherapy. In the original four different platinum-based chemotherapy regimens, one of the drugs that is pemetrexate was not used as first-line therapy, but was used in the maintenance setting. And the patient had the chemotherapy and then had either stable disease or a response, and patients were randomized between maintenance therapy with pemetrexate versus a placebo. And it demonstrated a statistically significant survival advantage over the maintenance therapy by about 5 months. And that is significant in terms of oncologic data, if you will. So I think that's important. And there's been another study that looked at maintenance with targeted therapy, that is erlotinib, the Saturn study, that did a very similar type of study and showed its advantage in both progression-free survival and more recently presented in San Francisco at the World Conference on Lung Cancer, that the overall survival was increased in those patients that got erlotinib.
Those two papers come at the end of decades of research, actually, into this issue. And it's kind of interesting when you look at all the papers all of them show that adding more drugs after initial therapy, continuing drugs, does seem to lead to a better outcome for patients, particularly in terms of survival. I think the contrasting those two trials, too, that you mentioned, the much bigger advantage was in using pemetrexed, and that would clearly be the best choice, I think, today.
Doctors, you know, all medications have some side effects. How do you help patients cope with the potential side effects when dealing with non-small cell lung cancer?
As difficult as side effects are, the real problem that people face, the threat to their life, is not the side effect, it's the cancer. And we can't let side effects get in our way of giving the most effective treatment for the cancer. That said, you know, it's every doctor's responsibility to know about those side effects, to do what can be done to try to prevent them. And nausea and vomiting is the best example. It's the most feared side effect, yet it's the most treatable side effect. With the drugs every physician has available to them today, nausea and vomiting can be prevented in the vast majority of patients, really 90%+, if the right drugs are given.
And I think there's another issue. I think about 10 to 15% of our patients with advanced disease are asymptomatic. And since patients, as Mark said, talk about the side effects when you talk to them about chemotherapy, they said, well, Dr. Ettinger, I'm not sick. Why don't you wait till I get sick from the cancer and then treat me? It doesn't work that way. When patients are well, they will do better with the therapy we recommend. When they're sick, they're going to be only sicker. So you want to treat the patient when they're well, not when they're sick. And the other problem they have and they complain about is fatigue, which I think we don't talk about it enough, because there's three reasons why you can have fatigue. The side effects of the chemotherapy, for example, be anemic, the cancer itself, and depression. And I think we have to be aware of that. And, of course, most patients deny I'm not depressed. Well, first of all, if they were diagnosed with advanced non-small cell lung cancer, it would be natural to be depressed. But there's clinical depression that needs to be treated.